You're listening to WAER News at WAER.org and NPR One. I'm Kijin Higashibaba. Syracuse Stage has announced the lineup of plays they'll produce for the 2018-2019 season, including a popular farce, an original play with a local historical connection, a holiday musical, and an updated Jane Austen work. WAER's Chris Bolt and Stephen Shepard of Stage Right Radio talked about the new season and what audiences can expect with Syracuse Stage's artistic director Bob Hupp and associate Kyle Bass.
Welcome. I'm WAER News Director Chris Bolt. I'm here today with Syracuse Stage Artistic Director Bob Hupp and Associate Artistic Director Kyle Bass to talk about the announcement of the new season of plays the theater will be producing. Joining us is also WAER's Stephen Shepard, who hosts and produces Stage Right Radio on WAER's HD3 channel. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you. Good to be
Thank
here.
Thank you. Glad
Happy to be here.
Now, Bob, before we get into the specific plays of the upcoming season, I wanted to ask, how do you go about the task of choosing a season? And, you know, what do you want to go into the mix of plays when you set up a whole season?
Mm-hmm. Well, Kyle and I jointly put together a series of plays and musicals. And so we really begin with the big picture. What stories do we want to tell on our stage? What stories can we bring to our audience, create for our audience, produce for our audience that will entertain, will engage, challenge. And so we really start out with that sort of broad task, that broad charge of what stories do we want to tell. And so to do that, we look far and wide. We keep a running list of plays that we're interested in. That list moves and evolves over the course of the season. Usually in the summer, we're talking in very broad brushstrokes, and we refine those brushstrokes through the fall, and then we get really serious in December and January, knowing that we're going to announce a new season, usually in February, at the latest, mid-March.
Mm-hmm. Would you add anything to that process?
No, I think Bob hit all the key points. One of the things that is interesting, that over the course of the year, you know, Bob is seeing work, I'm seeing work, or I'm reading plays, Bob's reading plays. So, you know, the process is, as he said, really kind of wide at first. It's a big pond we're kind of fishing in a little
sure,
bit.
Sure, right.
But it does get, called down pretty quickly when we need to. And then a whole bunch of other steps have to take place before we actually land on a season. There's the artistic idea and thinking, and then there's the business side of that model as well that has to take place. So.
Sure. Now, Bob, you're coming off your first full season at Syracuse Stage that's wrapping up. What did you learn in that season, the season that we're in, that helped you for your next season in terms of who's the audience, who's the community, maybe even the theater space itself?
Well, it's very interesting, and you're right. It's a lot. It's all those factors. It's the space itself, because that does influence the kind of work you can create and how you might create it and who would be creating it. You're right. The audience, I mean, we, in a way, you know, we had our season for next year, 2018-2019, fairly in place when we were still halfway through the current season. So, there, you know, we're still learning. I'm still learning. Mm-hmm. But definitely this a broad array of plays. I think we've been surprised that we had tremendous feedback, more than we anticipated for Next to Normal, for instance, or The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. Mm-hmm. Both plays did exceptionally well for us, as did, of course, The Wizard of Oz and also Three Musketeers. So we could take a look at those plays, and we can see that, well, yes, there is some appetite for new plays among mm-hmm. our audience. And when a show like Next to Normal, when you sat in the house for Next to Normal, you looked around and you saw a much younger audience than you might have seen for other plays in our season. Hmm. And so how an audience reacts, you know, the Syracuse is a fascinating community, very diverse in their tastes. And so we think it's part of our charge to be very diverse in our offerings.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of community, kicking off the 2018-19 season, you've got a play that I think this community is going to love, Noises Off. Now, not this current season, but last year, I believe there were two different community productions of Noises Off, so people are really going to flock to this one because it's just a favorite. They saw it at Baldwinsville, they saw it with Syracuse Shakespeare. What's the premise of Noises Off?
Well, Noises Off is a British farce about the creation of a piece of theater, about, you know, it's a play about a play, It's a play about characters who, their own lives. And of course, the big hook about Noise is Off is you see it from the audience perspective, and then the set turns around and you see it from behind the scenes. And that's really where the humor comes through. Interesting thing about Noise is Off, which is one, as you mentioned, one of the most popularly produced plays in the country. Syracuse Stage has never done Noise is Off. This is our first Noise is Off. And so I was very excited about that. And also this first play of the season, as we experienced with the Three Musketeers, we really want to bring a broad section of our audience, a broad section of our community to Syracuse Stage as we kick things off. So Three Musketeers, which has a certain populist appeal to it, Noise is Off has a certain populist appeal to it. And since we had never done it, and I had never directed it, and I'd always wanted to direct it, it seemed like a really good fit to kick off our new season.
Is it also the kind of play that you can do a lot of different things with, and you can put, I mean, I don't know if I'd say your own stamp on it, but you can conceive of it in kind of a different way so that you can have some fun with it, you know, as a director and, you know, on stage, et cetera.
Well, you can definitely have fun with it as a director and as actors as well. Noise is Off is the kind of play that has a very deep and broad artistic footprint. That is to say, it's been produced on Broadway commercially. It's been produced in a regional theater, and it's been produced in schools and community theaters around the country. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of things that have been done with Noise is Off. Of course, I always want to go back to the text. I always want to find ways that entertain our audience. And so, yes, there is a broad footprint, but whenever you approach a play, particularly a play like Noise is Off, you approach it as if you're doing it for the first time.
Now, the second play of the season is really quite an undertaking, mixing some local history with the notion of getting into the mind and circumstances of a slave. Kyle Bass wrote the play Possessing Harriet, and Kyle, you and I talked a little bit about this a while ago, so I was aware that this was coming down the pike, so I'm so glad to see that it's reached its, you know, time where it's going to be actually staged. Give us a little bit of how this story came about for you.
Sure. I had been partnering with OHA, the Onondaga Historical Association, a few years, having them create some displays, some dramaturgical displays, historical facts panels that we would exhibit during the runs of some of our shows. Previous to this position, I was the resident dramaturg. And I really tried to practice, Chris, a dramaturgy that was really connected to this area. We are, after all, Syracuse Stage. And so I really thought in those ways. It was that relationship with OHA that led me to the story of Harriet Powell. So OHA asked if I would write a play. They commissioned me to write a play. And it's always easy to imagine like the finish line before you start running.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that sounds great. Yes, I'll do that. Yeah. And that was 3.5 years ago.
Hmm.
And so, you know, the journey to this play, the journey, my journey into the play, using her story, thinking about her, and this is all set, you know, the story has its inciting incident really set in Syracuse as Harriet leaves a hotel. But ultimately, she winds up in Peterborough, at the home of Gerrit Smith,
right,
the abolitionist. And while there in 1839, she had the occasion to meet the young cousin of Gerrit Smith, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, in future years. And they had a conversation. There's really no record of that conversation. So what excited me about the story was that there was no record of that conversation, so I could invent. I was not looking to write a history play. I was really looking to write a drama. So because there was no record of the conversation, there was a great opening there. But what I did not anticipate was the length of time that it would really take, that it would take me to think about this play and to write my way into it. And it really wasn't until I connected the story of Harriet's enslavement with my own family's history of enslavement. And once I did that, then I knew what I was writing. And more importantly, I knew why I was writing it. But that personal connection to that history, the history of this country, and I really do think of slavery as the essential history point of this nation, that I had a personal connection, that really allowed me to think about how do I make this story universal. How do I make this event, little known event, mm-hmm. right, combined with my own family history, which is known to my family? How do I use that to speak to a wider audience? And how do I make 1839 a crucial lens for looking at 2018? So those were some of the puzzles I had to solve. That's how I came to the work, and that's how I approached the work.
Yeah, because I could imagine you can look at the historical events, Gerrit Smith's life, people know about, some people do, not everybody does, but our history with the Underground Railroad, how slavery impacted us in whatever way. You could see the historical events, but kind of feeling like what the people might have been like must have been much more of a difficult journey than just sort of the historical facts on a timeline.
Yes, and what helped me there was, there's tons written about Elizabeth Cady. She does mention this meeting in her autobiography. It's one paragraph, mm-hmm. a very small paragraph, and she's very demure about it. Like, the reader, you can imagine for him or herself what the life of this enslaved woman might have been. I don't need to go into the tawdry details and the awfulness of it all, right? And that's exactly what we need to go into, right? And there's a lot, obviously, on Gerrit Smith. But it's really exciting to be able to bring this story forward. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy and a little terrified that it's actually going to happen, but it's really exciting.
Mm-hmm. If you're not a little bit terrified, you're doing it wrong.
That's right.
Next up, what's the next show? Oh, this is one of my favorites. What do you got?
Oh, I was going to say, you always want to have some fun at holiday times. Mm-hmm. And so where are you taking us this year?
Well, it's Elf the Musical, which is a story that so many people identify with. Elf has become so, I'll go back up. So, we did The Wizard of Oz this holiday time, and that, mm-hmm. probably my generation, we grew up with The Wizard of Oz, and it was something we look forward to every year. But there is an entirely new generation that grew up with Elf, and it's turned into a musical, which only enhances the fun of the story. And so I was really excited when we were able to secure the rights for Elf. One of the defining characteristics of Syracuse Stage is our relationship with Syracuse University, and specifically Syracuse University Department of Drama. Mm-hmm. And so at the holiday time, we always use this opportunity to produce a big family-friendly musical. And so we're able to partner in the production with the Department of Drama and use the amazingly talented students who are right here in our building. Mm-hmm. And so here we get a wonderful, fun, silly story about Buddy the Elf, who discovers at his home in the North Pole that he's not an elf, and he goes to New York to find his dad and his family. We get to partner with the drama program, so we get to use students in this production. That's a win-win for everybody.
Mm-hmm. I can't wait because I love movies that are adapted into musicals, because usually the movie already has some real core audience, but then the music just adds so much more to it. And I am a member of that generation that did grow up with Elf, so I am particularly stoked for that.
When did they make it a musical?
Years back.
I don't know the exact
2010s,
year.
2010s, I think.
It's been a handful of years, long enough for it to have had a run in New York and Madison Square Garden, mm-hmm. to go on national tour several times, and to become a staple of regional theaters.
Great. Well, I am available for the Will Ferrell part.
You'd be surprised how many people think that they might be the next Will Ferrell.
Just call me Santa. No.
There you go.
And then going right along on the lighthearted, a little bit comedic train, we have the play Native Gardens right after that. There was one quote I saw. They called it a Dick Van Dyke show for the stage, or I Love Lucy with substance. Do you guys agree with that? You guys are staring at each other.
That's because I'm pitching this one over to Kyle. But
here's what I'll say. I was sitting in a meeting and one of my colleagues said, sometimes it's all right to laugh. It's okay to laugh, right? And these times in which we live, we can forget that it's okay to laugh. So here we have this play that really is talking about borders and fences and immigration, right? And the tensions and cultures, right? And it is a comedy, and it is, unabashedly a comedy, right? And I think part of its appeal is that it is rendered that it kind of sits very comfortably in our laps. But then you think, right? You know, should I be laughing at that?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you are. And I think that's part of what has made this play, which is being widely produced, what makes it, I think, so popular.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that our audiences will have a grand time to be let to laugh about these matters, right? But it's also, it's not making fun, right? It's not doing that at all.
It's not SNL. It's not something like that.
No, but it's, you know, it's taking this kind of open and lighter-hearted look at what have been serious and troubling and necessary conversations,
mm-hmm.
but then its theatricality, its is the laughter, is the comedy that it brings to this, and that release. When I saw the play in production, one of the things I noted is that the audience felt relieved for that hour and 45 minutes, 2 hours to be there and laughing.
Right. Well, yeah, I certainly know people who talk about Syracuse stage or other drama. Sometimes people want to really get into something that really makes you think and challenges you, and there's certainly a role for in the theater for that. Sometimes it needs to be kind of escape from that stuff. So here, in a way, you kind of get to touch both sides of that.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And it has, I don't have to tell anyone sitting in this room that the history of theater is full of of comedy that addresses serious matters.
Mm-hmm.
So this is that.
And speaking, we talked about this earlier. This is a relatively new play. It's only a couple years old, so it's definitely bringing something fresh to the Syracuse area.
It is. Karen Zacharias, the playwright, is one of the most popular playwrights writing in the country right now. She's had great success in other regional theaters. And Native Gardens, I think, as Kyle just alluded to, I suspect Native Gardens will be in the top 10 most produced plays in America next year. So we're very excited to be riding that wave and very excited about this particular production, because it does, as Kyle said, address issues that we need to be talking about. But it allows us to talk about them in ways that are not immediately confrontational.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe that's a good approach to a lot of the things that become so confrontational. Now, for the next play, you admit that most people think of Jane Austen as these musty old books, if I'm quoting from the advanced materials on the season from Syracuse Stage.
Yeah.
Certainly there are those out there who love these stories, from maybe, childhood or young adulthood and on. But what will we get as an audience out of Pride and Prejudice here?
One of the most fun nights of theater you could possibly imagine, because this is a new adaptation of Pride and Prejudice. Kate Hamill is the adapter's name. And Kate has built an amazing career nationally for herself as the new voice of Jane Austen. She began with an adaptation of Sense and Sensibility that really has swept the country, had an amazing run off-Broadway in New York City. She's continued that with other adaptations of Jane Austen. Pride and Prejudice is her most recent. It just closed off-Broadway a few months ago. And Kate brings an awareness, a sensitivity to Austen's work that the last thing you would think of when you're seeing Kate Hamill's adaptation is musty old book. It's anything but that. It's fun. It's irreverent. But yet it's also the heart of Jane Austen. So you get the power of those characters. You get to live in Jane Austen's world that she created with plays or with stories like Pride and Prejudice. But you also get a sensibility that's a little more modern, a little more with us today, in ways that the wonderful thing about Kate's work is you have that wonderful, perfect juxtaposition of timeless and timely. And that's what I think makes Kate's adaptation so particularly rich, and why I was excited when we were able to secure the rights to Pride and Prejudice.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know the season has one more show. Are you able to tell us anything about that?
We have an agreement with the rights-holding company that we won't announce until the latter part of March. It is a recent Tony Award-winning best play. That it is a powerful family drama, also with plenty of humor in it, that captivated audiences, was named, I think, by the New York Times as one of the best plays of the year. Many, many outlets named it the best play of that particular year. So, and we can't talk about it. I know that we're going to be one of the first companies in the country to be given the rights to produce the play.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons that we have to wait a little bit longer before we can talk about it. But, you know, it's a great conclusion to our season, and we're very much looking forward to being able to talk about it. But to get the rights, we had to promise that we wouldn't spill the beans until the end of March.
A little later, gotcha. I mean, as you look at the season that you put together, and, you know, you described it before that you wanted to have some breadth to it and appeal to different audiences and et cetera, can you know what the real high points will be? I mean, you admitted in this season that there were some surprises. The audience was different for some of the plays, et cetera. You know, how much can you know in advance what will really engage and excite the audience? Of course, you're excited about your choices, all for good reasons. You know, you looked at so much stuff, et cetera. But can you know what you're going to get?
Not at all.
No,
you can't know. We do a lot of research into historic trends. We look at plays. You can kind of divide many plays up by genre. And you can look at a genre of play and say, well, I see over the last 10 years it's producing at 55.6% of capacity, or it's producing at 88% of capacity over a period of 5 or 10 years in that genre. So what does that tell us? That's what marketing uses to make their financial projections,
right?
Is historic data. But I find this year was a big surprise. Curious Incident was a big surprise. Mm-hmm. Next to Normal was a big surprise. Later this year, we're producing a new play called The Magic Play. We'll see how that one does. Also a very new play. We are seeing that our audiences do like newer stories. Obviously, musicals tend to do well for us. They are riskier because they are more expensive to produce.
Sure.
You know, to me, what I enjoy about the Syracuse audience that I've seen in the year and a half that I've been here is that audiences seem to me like they're willing to go along for the ride. If we do it well, if it's well produced, well crafted, and well told, then our audiences will go on that journey with us. And that's particularly rewarding and very exciting about the upcoming season.
And Kyle, you've been here, needless to say, a lot longer. Have you noticed that plays can get word of mouth and it really helps in this community? Probably more so than, say, I don't know, in New York City, you know, they might look for the review of the play. Here, it seems like some of these plays gain word of mouth momentum.
I think that's right. And that's a blessing. And it can also be a little bit of a curse to rely on that, because generally speaking, our runs are 3 or 4 weeks. And so we haven't got a lot of time to get that word of mouth engine revved and going, right? So we really got to get them in the first week, the previews, opening weekend. But absolutely, word of mouth is huge. I was out to one of my favorite coffee haunts the other day. And I'm a notorious eavesdropper. And I heard two separate conversations at 7:30 in the morning about, you know, what was happening at Syracuse Stage and how great it was. And they'd seen this and they'd seen that. And so, you know, people are talking, right? And it is exciting. We have a concierge table, and members of the staff kind of rotate, taking turns being in there and kind of manning that table. And that gives us the opportunity to hear directly from the audience members in the space, right, as they're coming in, during intermission, and in some cases, as they're leaving. And that anecdotal information tells me that, you know, we're on to something, right? People are excited. You know, they want to know what's next season. We're doing renewal right now, and we're doing it pretty in a nice, brisk sort of way. That's exciting. So, you know, the alchemy of it all, you know, if I had that, you know, I'd probably be doing something else.
Right,
but,
gotcha.
But I think Bob is right. You know, with the quality of work, the selection of, you know, of the plays, and people are connecting to the work in surprising and wonderful and deep ways. We're hearing back from our audiences in really rich ways. So that's gratifying and really, really exciting.
All right. Well, Kyle Bass, Associate Artistic Director for Syracuse Stage, and Artistic Director Bob Hupp, thanks for joining us. I'm Chris Bolt, along with Stephen Shepard from WAER, and we'll look forward to next season.
Thank Great. You.
Thank you.
For more on this and other local news stories, go to WAER.org.